Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu eurem Lieblings-KI-Podcast, dem AI Melange aus Wien. Genauer zu dem Summer Special Nummer 2. Ich würde wahnsinnig gern wissen, wo ihr euch alle gerade herumtreibt diesen Sommer und wo ihr vielleicht digitally detoxt, euch erholt, abschaltet oder vielleicht ganz im Gegenteil euch mit vollem Fokus mit den großen Themen der technologischen Transformation unserer Zeit beschäftigt. Ich kann euch sagen, ich bin selbst ein wenig in einer Rabbit Hole gewesen und habe mich eher mit den dunklen Seiten des Big Techs beschäftigt. Ist nicht unbedingt für immer zu empfehlen, so eine Beschäftigung, aber der Sommer eignet sich eigentlich ganz gut dafür. Und in meinem Fokus waren und sind so die großen Themen der Produktivität, der digitalen Souveränität, der Demokratie. Denn ich bereite mich unter anderem auch auf das Forum Altbach vor, das wie jedes Jahr Ende August stattfindet. Und dort darf ich wieder einige Diskussionen und Hikes zu diesen Themen moderieren. Wer Lust hat, nach Altbach zu kommen, es gibt möglicherweise noch ein paar Karten. Also nichts wie hin auf die Webseite und vielleicht sehen wir uns dann vor Ort. Die News aus der AI-Welt, zum Beispiel das neue Modell von Grok oder der neue Agent-Mode von OpenAI, die haben sich eigentlich auch ganz gut gefügt in diese großen Fragen. Denn ich meine, welche Daten geben wir her? Wie schützen wir uns und unsere Kinder vor verführerischen Pornocharakteren in der digitalen Welt? Und. Das alles kommt natürlich mit all den Vorteilen dieser neuen Modelle und Features. Die KissCam-CEO-Geschichte hat mich natürlich auch erreicht und eher vielleicht aus einer anderen Perspektive beschäftigt, nämlich der Perspektive der globalen Überwachung, in der wir leben. Denn ich muss sagen, ich bin eher in diesem Thema auf der Seite von Liam Gallagher von Oasis, der neulich meinte, bei Oasis-Konzerten gibt es keine doofen Cams und jeder soll und kann machen, was er oder sie will. Denn das geht sie als Band nämlich gar nichts an. Insofern, lieber Chris Martin, ich bin der Meinung, dass man nicht so eine Welt haben wollen, in der eine Person dermaßen global bloßgestellt werden kann. Also ich finde, eure Kisscams sind spätestens diese Woche einfach nicht mehr cool. Aber viel wichtiger als die globalen Gossips ist das Thema unseres Summer Specials. Ich kann euch sagen, dieses Special verdient es, dass ihr euren Urlaub kurz pausiert und reinhört. Denn ihr werdet ganz bestimmt inspiriert und zum Nachdenken angeregt wieder rausgehen. Diesmal gibt es keine Tools-Tipps, sondern wirklich ein cooles Zukunftsgespräch vom Feinsten. Bei mir zu Gast ist der CEO des wohl größten Tech-Unternehmens Österreichs und Mitteleuropas, Alejandro Platter, der CEO von der A1 Telekom Austria Gruppe. Er führt das riesige, sich stetig und ständig wandelnde Unternehmen seit 2014 an und er hat es auch zum profitabelsten Telco-Unternehmen Europas gemacht. Es gibt kaum einen Bereich, den das Unternehmen irgendwie nicht berührt. Also B2C, B2B, IoT, Cloud, Digital Literacy und. Und wenn man so breit verwurzelt ist und so viele Lebens- und Wirtschaftsbereiche berührt mit dem, was man tut und eigentlich am Kern der Technologie sitzt und natürlich auch schon so lange Zeit die Industrie mitprägt, dann hat man ein sehr gutes Gefühl für die Reise, auf der wir uns gerade alle befinden. Im technologischen und im humanistischen Sinne. Das Gespräch führen wir auf Englisch und damit sage ich Welcome to the show, dear Alejandro. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Anna. Nice to see you again.
How are you?
Very good, thank you. Very good. Intensive days, as always, but nice to be with you today.
Let me start immediately with the topic of our talk today. So, what is AI doing for you as a CEO of such a large company as A1?
Well, I think still AI is full of mysteries to me. Of course, you can imagine that basically I read everything that pops up about AI. And, you know, only in Financial Times you have a couple of articles every day. Today there is one about the importance of putting your data in order to make agents work, you know, very, very basic, but we should never forget about the basics, no? And so, of course, but it's a lot of mysteries as well. You know, is it going to be this utopian reality, you know, where many people are saying that in a couple of years we will have hundreds of companies, billion euro companies with one employee running agents or not. And for me, it's still a mystery what is going to happen. And the difficulty of my job, as many other people, is that we cannot wait. We need to act in the meantime. So we need to act in uncertainty. While we see things developing. So it's very interesting times.
So how does this look like for you personally? Like how do you personally use AI every day or every other day?
I mean, you have the very basic things that we don't search in Google or those things anymore, no? So all our search activities are done using AI today. But not only the searches that you would do in the traditional web searches, you know, you seek information differently. So I don't ask the people in the company anymore for things, you know. So before you would ask, okay, I want to know how well Magenta is doing. You know? So you ask your guys in controlling, so do me analysis on Magenta, or I want to understand, you know, how... take your technology guys the difference between Azure and Amazon AWS. So you will ask your technical team to come up with a, now you do it yourself. So without having to, not to ask, without having to wait. That's the biggest difference is waiting time. So that has changed radically how I work every day. I can do things much quicker than before.
And how has it changed for A1? Now, I understand you just said it's the topic is not super mature yet and it's not really clear, but what would be the kind of the focus areas for you to deploy the new kinds of AI tools?
I think today in A1, we are in a cultural struggle. You know, I think the success or not of AI is more cultural than technology. You know, I read the other day that the digital divide 2.0 is not about, like in the first digital divide, not about access to digital infrastructure. You know, like if you go back, you know, 40 years ago, 30, the debate was countries with access or people with access and people without access. Now everybody has a smartphone in the world and everybody has access to free of charge AI, you know, limited functionality, but still very powerful. So the second divide is people willing to use it and people not willing to use it. And that's a cultural battle that we need to put in front of all the employees in A1 to say, look, guys, it's your choice if you use it or not to use it. But the ones who are not use it will have a huge disadvantage. So as many changes driven by technology is more a cultural issue than a technology issue. And I'm working a lot on the culture aspects, the human aspects of this more than the technology aspects. I think technology will be solved by many. The cultural, the human aspects is where the challenge is.
Yeah, there might be some things in our way that we would need to solve. But how would you say does this topic of AI fit into kind of the broader picture of other things happening? Because it's not the only transformation we are seeing. So there's this whole geopolitical topic, societal topics, economic issues. Where would you fit it in?
It's very difficult to know. You know, I think we need to learn to operate in doubt, you know, and operate in uncertainty, because the way to stay flexible is to be unsure. If you are too sure about whatever outcome, you are anchored in that scenario, and then you, as you know, much better than me, all your biases start to work out, And then you have confirmation biases, you stop seeing the alternatives, you ignore the evidence, etc. So I think in these uncertain times, the best way to operate is within uncertainty. So, and that's what the philosophy that I try to use. I don't know, but I need to decide today, you know? So I do a step, but I keep my options always open. In this setup, I think that evidently AI will start in our business in the call center. Evidently, and that we are doing today. We started many years ago with machine learning, with, you know, so it's not new. But, you know, we see today that 81% of the calls can be managed by AI without human interaction already. So, and that's a huge, huge change. And customers, they don't even know that they're talking to actually AI. They think that they're talking to a person. And the power of, especially in our company that operates in relatively small countries with different languages, the flexibility of AI in terms of language, you know? So it's not only that you can use, you know, Croatian, you can also use dialects within Croatian, you know? And this can be automatically and dynamically implemented. So the opportunity is huge. I think this is only one area, you know.
There was a funny story recently about Croatian, by the way, that one chatbot refused to give answers in Croatian. And there was a question why all of a sudden. And one of the assumptions was that it kind of learned that talking Croatian the feedback by the Croatian users was more critical. So it kind of learned that if it speaks Croatian, that's not very welcome. So now then it started to refuse to speak Croatian. Interesting little stories that we experience and found out on the way. But one question I need to ask you, because when we talk about all these things, we talk, you know, they're all digitally enabled, obviously. And we are on the way to this so-called technological maturity, where potentially, like everything that is theoretically possible, technologically will be materialized pretty soon. But this all kind of drives some somewhat endless connectivity needs by the society. And I mean, you are enabling that this endless connectivity. So what does this mean for a company like A1? How is this shaping your strategic decisions? I mean, are you now investing as hell into building infrastructure, or how does this look like?
I think we have an ambition to go beyond connectivity because we see a connectivity, as you rightly say, as an enabler of many things. But we are not only satisfied with just being the enabler. We want to be the one who is adding value in an end-to-end view. What we see is that many companies like us are struggling with these journeys. So especially when you talk about things like cloud migration, very, very easy. And cloud migration is a prerequisite of a successful AI implementation.
Right? Exactly.
So you need to move your data from on-prem environments to the cloud. You need to move your apps from on-prem environments to the cloud. When we did this analysis ourselves, you know, and we said, okay, we need to lead by example. If we want to sell this as a service to enterprise and help them in this journey, we need to do the journey ourselves first. And when you go and ask the first question, you know, you will see that your team will tell you 100% of my apps are cloud native. Mm-hmm. Good. Then migrate them. And then you will see that is not possible. Okay. So you should not stop at the title, because as you go down into understanding the application environment, you realize that, yeah, they are cloud native, but not really, you know? And then that's why companies stop. That's where they confront the challenges. And that's where we see that we, as A1, we can be a provider of an end-to-end solution on top of connectivity, on top of cloud infrastructure, which is the other infrastructure that is not only connectivity, but cloud infrastructure as a part of the critical infrastructure as well. But what is even more important is the layers on top. And mm-hmm. when you talk about AI, we are thinking exactly in the same way, you know? So you have to have a good team analyzing your apps. You have to have a good team analyzing how to migrate, how to discontinue, how to reprogram your apps. How do you do the data? How you transfer the data? So all this consultancy part and migration strategy is as important as the infrastructure. And thirdly, that is very important, is all the management of the cloud expenses is very important. How to optimize this infrastructure now from a software standpoint, not only from a hardware standpoint. So when you look at these end-to-end capabilities that we are building, that is the physical layer, but it's also the software layer, and we will add the AI layer. We can talk later what we are planning to do there. And the cloud layer and the application layer and the consulting layer, you know, this complexity, I think we want to be for SMEs like a one-stop shop to take you from A to B as seamless as possible.
I think this is highly, highly needed and highly necessary as the market is very disintegrated. You know, different companies sell bits and pieces of the puzzle, but it's very hard to really know. As you say, the taking which decision is the correct one, because you have to understand the whole picture and you have to understand the whole end-to-end setup to be able to take the right decisions. Maybe we can explore this AI layer. What do you mean by that? What kind of services would be there?
Well, I think that we took the decision. I mean, you talk about geopolitics, no? And of course, the first thing that you need to think is, okay, you can go and partner with one of the big players and bring that to market in a more like in a box solution, right? You can easily partner with, I don't know, Microsoft and go to market like that. You know, that's one option. We think that we need to have a European environment that is not so much relying on the American players. I think that for some customers, geopolitics will not play a role, but for some customers, it will, especially government, financial services, insurance, all these companies that are in these more sensitive areas where data where the data is located is very critical. So we believe in that. So we are creating our own platform with our own cloud infrastructure where you can internally, for example, we have this common platform and then every market is generating their own agents and we give them total autonomy for them to explore and innovate and experiment. Mm-hmm. with the only condition that they need to run this in this platform. Mm-hmm. So with customers, we are planning to do the same. You have the option of we are developing the agents with you, together with you, and then we run it in this platform, or you develop the agents yourself and you run it in our platform. So that's our go-to market strategy.
So very interesting. So whoever thought we're going to be talking about B2C only and like the old school telco stuff, this is not the case, obviously. We're talking really modern B2B cloud and AI topics. Very nice. But I would like to switch to a bit of a meta topic with you as well. As I know you as a big thinker and philosophy lover, and I mentioned in the intro that, you know, I've been thinking about these bigger topics in the past weeks a lot, and one of the questions that I asked myself, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that, is this progress in technology. So we are continuously progressing the technology step by step by step. How does that fit with our with the humanist perspective? Are we too prone or too focused on technology and maybe losing our focus from how we need to improve also as humans to catch up with the new stuff? How do you see that, these two things?
I think first, I think that we are too arrogant as humans, you know, and then we tend to look at technology with a much more critical eye that we look ourselves. Mm-hmm. For example, we are now being very critical about hallucinations in AI. Like if we as humans would not hallucinate, right? like, oh, but sometimes AI will give you a wrong answer because hallucinates. Yes, and my colleague agent in the call center also gives a lot of wrong answers. Is that the only thing is we don't measure it like that and we don't judge it like that. So biases in humans are accepted. Biases in technologies are not. Why not? Right? Why we have so different standards to judge human behavior on technology behavior, you know? So I think we need to have a more honest discussion about the limitations as humans, because that's a way to improve. But you know what I think about? I think that we as leaders, we are ill-educated in psychology, and we should be having masters on psychology, sociology, because we deal with people all the time, and we are not aware of the limitations of being human or the reality of being human, not only the limitations. But when we go to technology, we expect perfection, you know, in a way that doesn't exist. So, you know, I think it was Freud or Jung, one of these guys said, you know, when we look at others, we look through a window. When we look at ourselves, we look at a mirror, no? So when we judge ourselves, we are very compassionate. When we judge others, we are ruthless, right? The same with technology. We look at technology in a very strict in a very strict view or eyes. When we look at our human behavior, we have a lot of leeways.
It's very interesting. It's I hear also a lot of kind of expectations on technology to be this and that, and now we have a different kind of technology like AI, especially the generative AI that is not delivering on that side of the expectations. But what do you see? What would we need to learn as leaders? What would you say would be three things that we would need to learn about, as you say, from the psychology or philosophy, or simply to think about?
I think that one thing that we need to learn as leaders is certainty is an illusion. And of course, we as human beings, psychologically, we feel very comfortable with certainty, because our brain is reinforcing certainty all the time. We feel uncomfortable to operate in doubt. But the problem with certainty is an illusion. So it's a choice that we make. I always tell people here, when they come with an easy correlation, that means that either they are avoiding to see alternatives, or they choose not to look to alternatives, because there are no easy correlations. Correlations are complex. Usually, if you know, like, if you increase prices, you will lose customers. If you decrease prices, you will increase customers. No, it's much more complex than that. So if they come with an easy correlation, have doubts. And I think that creating a culture where we can operate in doubt without feeling insecure is very important. Because if you operate in doubt, you are willing to change. So then you adapt faster. When you're entering an area like what we are discussing now, AI, where there is, we don't know what is going to happen. Could be the utopia world, or could be, you know, something, Skype, you know, that will disappear sooner or later. We don't know. You need to learn how to operate in doubt. Not because it's not good to stop and to be paralyzed by uncertainty, but it's as bad as waiting because you don't know, as being too certain in a scenario that you don't know. So just learn how to operate in doubt is very important. Don't fall into easy correlations, very important. Understanding your own limitations, your own bias, your own psychology, your own personality, very important. People, we humans, tend to resolve the problems in the same way all the time. That cannot be right. Right?
And why is that? Why do you think is that? We always,
it's a matter of how you build your personality. Your personality or your identity, this is coming from Lacan, is built from your environment, the environment you're born in. So if you are born in Austria, probably you tend to be more conservative than liberal, right? If you're born in San Francisco, you probably tend to be more liberal than conservative. So that's nothing to do with you. It's not your choice. It's where you were born. It's, you take your identity from where you can. And where you can is your environment. Mm. And then you build your identity. And then once you have your identity, that's what you hold on to, you know? And that makes you view the world with certain lenses. And when you face problems, you see it for lenses, with these lenses. So if you are born in a more conservative society, you will tend to see more the risk than the opportunities. Mm-hmm. When you are born in a more liberal society, you tend to see more the opportunities than the risks. The reality is not changing. The risks and opportunities are exactly the same. But how you look at them is different. Also, your education is very important. If you are a lawyer, right? That's your identity as well. You tend to see more the risks than the opportunities, right? In a normal distribution, no, in average. If you are a psychologist, you will tend to see more the opportunities than the risks, you know? So, and that's all good. It's the beauty of difference, you know? I'm a more risk taker. I need a CFO that is more conservative who said, no, be careful, too much risk, too much risk, too much risk. And I think the job as a leader is to understand that the team should complement you. It's very difficult to implement that. It's easy to say, I want a team that complements you. It's very difficult to operate because we want to be right. We don't want to be proven wrong.
That's interesting that maybe I'm just having this spontaneous thought. Maybe AI could help us exactly over bridge that and say, be different than me and, you know, challenge me. When I talk about AI, I mean chatbots in this case. You know, we could build ourselves small agent bots that are different than us. And then we would have a lot of difference around us. I'm not sure if that would really work. But maybe an idea.
No, I think it's a great idea. I think that if you understand who you are, so introspection is very important in leadership, no? Then you can have agents that complement you, definitely, that look show you an alternative to how you solve the problem.
And until then, I think we can simply try, when we use the bots every day, try not to seek for the confirmation bias and seek for the answers we are hoping for and expecting for. But yeah, be open-minded about that.
So true. I think that the topic is in the question, no? So there are biases in the question. So it's how to learn how to put the question in an unbiased way. For example, you say, which is the company with more revenue growth? This is a bias thing. You're looking at revenue growth, you know? Mm. And maybe you should look at innovation, but you put revenue growth, you know? Mm. And you said, which is the company with more revenue growth coming from innovation? So how to learn to put the questions in a way that you remove your own biases or tendencies to see the problem in one way.
Exactly. And yeah, and maybe learn to ask interesting questions overall. So imagine we have built this perfect machine in some ways. So it can complement us in many ways and it can help us in many ways. So we are in this, let's imagine we are in this utopian world. What would remain for us to do, or what would be important for us to still work on? I know it's a big question. It's a difficult one. But I know you have thoughts around that.
I think that's the biggest questions of humankind, you know, why we are here, you know, of course. And if you will, you know, there was a very famous Austrian philosopher, Ludwig Wittgenstein, who said the problem is the question is wrong, right? The problem is language, no? What do you mean? What is the purpose? There is no purpose, right? So what do you're trying to find an answer for a problem that actually does not exist. And of course, I'm thinking about that, you know, because if you say, okay, at the end, companies are the product of our customers, right? So that's, and our customers are employees of other companies. So in this utopian world that there is no jobs, right? Because everything is done by data and software at the end, AI, you know? What are we going to do as a society? You know, where are we going to find purpose? Right?
And where the wealth is going to come from, right? I mean, that's also a question.
And where the wealth is going to come from is one question, how you secure that you can distribute that wealth, mm-hmm. you know, because today you have six companies that are 1 to 2 trillion mm-hmm. and the rest of the world, no? And if this is times 100, you know, so, which is very bad for the same companies, because if you consolidate too much wealth, you cannot grow anymore, you know? So that's a problem. You need to consolidate enough wealth so there is enough left so you can keep consolidating wealth. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, humankind, and I think evolution, now we're going into existential topics, no? Evolution is not, there is no incentive on fairness. There is no fairness in evolution. When a lion is killing a rabbit, there is no good and bad. The lion is not bad. The concept of morality is a human invention, you know? But mm-hmm. in the animal kingdom, which is 99.999% of the history of this universe, it has nothing to do with humans. There is no moral, and machines will have the moral background that we put in them, because they use our own data to generate their own thinking, right? Mm. So I think it's a philosophical question. The positive things is that we have the weekends, right? And we find purpose in the weekends somehow. What if we have weekends that are last 5 days? Are we going to find 5 days weekend purpose? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we'll play more tennis. I don't know. Maybe we'll read more books. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope so. More time for tennis is always good.
So
looking into the future, this is the final question that I ask actually all of my guests. And I will share with you, every single answer until now was an optimistic one. The question on look into the future 5 to 10 years from now. Now, I know you would not describe yourself as an optimist. So I'm very curious, when we talk about look into the future, how, apart from all these big questions we discussed, but how do you imagine, like, where are we 5 to 10 years from now, technologically and humanistically?
That's a very difficult question, you know, because it's so difficult to predict the future, no?
What will remain? Maybe that's easier. Like, what will not change?
What will not change? I think the human psychology will still be unknown and complex as it is, because we know very little about how our brain works, even today, very little. Mm-hmm. I mean, biases were probably discovered 20, 30 years ago when people are starting to talk about there are some unconscious processes that we are not aware of and blah, blah. But there is a lot of behavioral topics that we're just discovering. And I think we have a long way to understand we as humans. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting as we interact more with machines and this interaction between brain and machines becomes more integrated, and how we're going to control biases. Maybe we have an alarm on biases when we said, me, you're too biased, you know, make biases from unconscious to conscious by using software. When we are judging people, you're biased because this person is black or white or yellow or mm-hmm. this type, all the things that the biases that we have on those things. Maybe there is some software coming to help us. You know, we have software helping us to navigate the world all with GPS. Maybe we have software helping us navigate our brain. You know, that would be very interesting. I think that if we integrate that, the suffering of mankind will be reduced substantially, because a big part of our suffering is our own creation. It's about expectation management, it's our judgmental, it's about victimizing ourselves, it's about all these behaviors that we have that are mostly unconscious. And if we have some kind of alarm in our brain that say, don't go that pathway because it's not good for you, like victimizing yourself, you lose a 10, you said, oh, poor me, blah, blah, or you said, no, you have to train this and you did so well here, so train on that. So you have some software in your brain coming to that. That would be very optimistic. How to be less human and more happy, you know, with our brain. I'm totally convinced, going back to Wittgenstein, that happiness is a gap of expectations and how we manage expectations. And I think there is going to be a lot of software working on our favor as it is today. So that I'm very optimistic. I think the best thing that technology could do for us is take these negative aspects of being human, mm-hmm. you know, like how we discriminate people unconsciously, how do we judge, all these things. I would love to have software telling me, you know, alarm, alarm, alarm. Don't do it. It's not good for you. Every time you judge somebody, it's telling a lot about yourself, you know, and every judgment brings unhappiness, you know, negative judgments I'm talking about, brings unhappiness. And it's very rewarding at the beginning what you're doing, but it's not good in the long run for your mental health. And I think if we have software who help us to, your judging gives you short-term benefit, but long-term cost. And I think software is going to get there, and AI is going to help us go through that journey of being less human, more happy.
That's actually a very optimistic view. I wasn't expecting it, but I'm very glad to hear about it. Thank you very much for this really, really amazing little talk. I'm sure there are a lot of heads spinning now and thinking. And if you're one of them, do share the episode and spread the word. And yeah, let's be in touch. I wish you all a wonderful rest of the summer. There will be a couple of more summer specials, not too much. We don't want to overwhelm your brains on vacations. So take care. Speak soon. Thanks, Alejandro. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Anna.